Hey guys, welcome to the MC Anime Podcast.
We cover anime, geek culture, Japanese aesthetics, and Asian studies. We are a multi-fandom podcast, and you can expect to hear topics in your favorite hobby or fandom activity potentially. You can find MC Anime on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. Also, please check out mcanimepodcast.com, our website. Furthermore, stay tuned in for another episode.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the MC Anime Podcast. NC here, and guess what's back with us today? Leslie, how's it going?
It's going, man. I'm finally glad we were able to have our schedules meet up and we can meet and talk. I always love talking with you.
Oh yeah. So tell about a little about yourself and we go into the talk.
Well, I should say, photographer, fellow podcaster, and a writer, and working on new material. But you know, lately I've just been working on the podcast and writing, and you brought up something that I know a lot about because it's one of my favorite animes, so that's why I'm here.
Yes, and today we're going to do a portion of an anime review for Robotech. So the anime review Robotech is interesting because it dives into the Macross continuity of the shows that it's built up over the years, but it's three different properties and re-edited for an American audience.
Yes, it is definitely. I know there's a little bit of difference or whatever, but it's still, from what I understand, still tells like the story how it is. The general version of it. Maybe little details are different, but that's what happens when you translate stuff.
Well, the first season is based off SDF Macross, which is Super Dimension Fortress Macross. The second season of the Master
One.
Saga.
Forget. Sorry, yes. I didn't mean to. All right.
That's the ship. Well, yeah. Anyway, then the second series is the Southern Dimension Cavalry Southern Cross. And then the third iteration is Genesis Climber Mespita. I don't know why it's called that, but it is.
Yeah, it's just. Especially with animes I've been seeing, they're coming up with these long names and everything. Like, it just. Getting a little out of hand, just like parents naming their kids nowadays.
Super Dimension Fortress Macross is four different words, so
yeah.
I mean, when you go into Super Dimension Cavalry Southern Cross, what do you want? Like, it's just, I mean, Mespita, being the third season, is really short. And then we have the continuity of the movies, boy. Robotech, the first movie, footage, clapped together from Megazone 2-3 plotline, and deleted footage from the OVA of Southern Cross put together. So, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So, they put that movie together. At least the second movie, the
Sentinels?
The Sentinels series, it was supposed to be a TV show, but they just put three episodes together, and it was pretty much the Alex Hunter and Commander Hayes saga to get married. So, and send off to the SDF-3 in the space.
Don't you mean Rick Hunter and Alex Hunter?
I didn't say Alex Hunter, I said Commander Hayes.
Well, you said Alex Hunter and then Commander Hayes, and I was like, don't you mean Rick?
No, Rick Hunter, yeah.
Okay, it's like Alex Hunter, I'm like, did they have...
So, that's what it's brought together from a TV show that didn't work. Then the third movie is based off the Shadow Chronicles, which was also supposed to be another TV show, but never took off.
Yeah, it's really weird. I've read about that. You know how, especially nowadays, we're reading about something that's supposed to happen, and then for whatever reason, whether it's a video game, a TV series, or movie, the studios or the people in charge just can't seem to get their shit together, and it just never happens. And you're like, I wanted this to happen, but you won't let it, you know?
Oh, yeah. But yeah, so with the introductions in the way, let's do SDF Macross, the Macross saga, ultimately known in the Robotech. So with Macross, not much changed, It was still the same, most of the same similar storyline with a couple of tweaks, but it's the dimension of Across that everyone loves.
Yeah.
It's one of the people's most favorite seasons of Slobodan. Just because it's the anime that kind of introduced us to
mechs.
This mecha as a whole into capitalizing it more than it was. Because where before that was like Ultraman, different sci-fi projects into hyperspace and stuff like that.
But we had Transformers too.
Yeah, Transformers and Voltron was also...
Yeah, the original Voltron.
Like, the difference with them is I wouldn't say that Transformers is mecha. More so that they are creatures of mechanized bodies.
I can get that. I can agree with that. But I mean, we also mentioned Voltron, which I still think the original Voltron series is still the best. Not the one they tried to come out with back in the early 2000s and then the one at Netflix.
Yes, but you also have to take note, when Robotech was in effect in America, its syndication for 85 episodes was interesting compared to Transformers and Voltron, where every single episode was a standalone plot that was comprehensive. Transformers and Voltron at the time was a little slower and more geared to a younger audience.
That is true, yes.
So when you actually look back, people really love Robotech, really expanding Japanese anime influence into the cartoon slot, like that when Robotech aired on Cartoon Network.
It really did.
It changed how we in the West consumed it from the 90s and the 2000s to make it more mainstream. So what do you think about Frost's when Robotech was introduced as a alternative to Macross but needed 65 episodes to exist?
To me, I feel like, especially just how Robotech, when it was introduced, it was of its time. It was from the 80s. It had all the 80s glitz and glamour going on. And us Americans are still obsessed with the 1980s and all the stuff that was coming out from that time frame. And I feel like them bringing that into, I think it hit mainstream, audiences on Cartoon Network in the 90s. You know, we're all kids of the 80s at that time. And so we were watching it and we just loved it. And I'm glad that it kind of made it a little bit more comprehensive, because I do feel like sometimes animes, they drag out things for so long. And like you were saying, the continuity in the episode just kind of kept you going and kept you interested in the plot and the characters of Robotech a lot. Yeah. Mainly because when it's hidden time frame, it was aimed towards like teenagers that talked about some stuff. And yes, you had mechas, you had some fighting going on, there were aliens, and you had the humans dealing with all the stuff that they're doing with their inner relationships. And that's one of the things I liked, is just how you do have like main characters, but then there's other characters, kind of like how animes do. Robotech was based around Rick Hunter and Roy Folker, and you can feel when some characters died, how they felt, and how, I can go in more, but I'm sure there's other things you gotta ask, but that's how I feel when I first watched it, when I was like, probably the early 90s, I was like 8 or 9 or whatever. I remember it on Toonami, and then I just remember watching it over and over throughout the years, and I'm in my 30s now, and I still like love watching it.
Yeah, my introduction to Robotech was actually through another podcast. We were having Battle of the Planets compared to Macross, and then Robotech being the introduction to Macross, and that was an interesting episode, because that was the Cosmic Function for all Nerd Kind music album. So he was definitely an interesting figure, and I actually had a clip made, and I really liked the clip, Macross being 3 different shows. I started watching it. When I heard 3 different shows all connected, and then I looked at the lore, I said, okay, this has a lot of potential. Let's give it a try.
Yeah, I mean, just like with any show, it's maybe you get the ending, it's not, you know, as you watch, you hear a lot of things, a lot of stuff makes sense, but there's still a couple of things in the lore and in the continuity that you're kind of like scratching your head on. But I think that happens with all shows.
Yeah.
And I guess another thing to why Robotech was such a hit in America was also the music that they had playing.
Yeah, they changed the music to fit a more American audience.
They did.
So I liked it. It was, you know, when it came to the Zentradi depiction, to them within the SDF-1, to them defending Earth by leaving and fighting the battle in space and then coming back and then have to leave again, was really the turning point where I felt like, you know, they were sucked back into space after returning home.
Yeah. Well, you bring that up, you kind of, like, feel bad for the Robotech forces or the SDF-1, you know, military, because they had to perform some new technology they've never used before, and they end up in space. They're being chased by the Zentradi, and they come all the way back to Earth just for Earth to be like, no, you need to leave because they're attacking us. We don't want you. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so they have
to... Yeah, we're considered them refugees. They died from the first day of Macross City.
Yeah.
This is the streets. It's like, so you know, you like keeping this entire 70,000 people hostage on a ship as refugees. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and then you got to also think about when they did the default mold warp and they're on the outside of Saturn. They brought the city with them, and then the engineers were able to bring the city onto the ship. You know? Kind of marvel at that, at how they're able to figure that out, you know?
Well, they re-engineered some of the materials that they had and put it back together. And they also were able to make modifications to the FDF-1, which was actually known as FDF-2.
Really?
Yes, because the FDF-2 was the modifications that after Macross City took over was with the implication of it, but carriers and stuff.
I mean, I remember they had the SDF-2, which they were getting ready to launch, and then they blew it up or whatever, I think, in the first season of Robotech. But then they had the SDF-3 that they managed to get out, and that's where, you know, Rick Hunter and, you know, Lisa Hayes take off into their, you know, into the sunset.
SDF-1 falls off after this Zentradi invasion, and toward the end, when they were about to launch SDF-2, it wasn't ready to go to battle, so, you know, the last remaining forces of the Renegades from Zentradi shot it back down permanently.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, that is what happened. And, I mean, even just, like, I like how the humans interact with the Zentradi, especially in the first season. You come to find out that the Zentradi aren't even, you know, they're being used as well, you know? It's kind of messed up how their race is.
Well, yeah, they're just clones, and the entire army to fit the needs of the master, Robotech.
Yeah, which is messed up. They were just basically made to be warriors and fight for the Robotech masters. They were it was their military, and you learn that when, especially when they had some of the human fighters of the Robotech forces are on these ships. They know how to use the equipment, but they don't know how to repair shit. You know, so it's just like they're cannon fodder, basically.
And the only way they can get reinforcements back in is if the cloning process using protoculture to keep driving up fodder for the soldiers.
Yeah. I mean, we all know that's what Robotech was all about. It's fight over resources, basically. Protoculture.
These clones are almost genetically similar to humans that we actually add, you know, Max, Sterling, and Maria getting married.
And so, having a kid.
Yes. So, it's interesting to see how, you know, the unification for the remaining Zentradi and the Renegades and, like, with the two, like, because original Macross was two seasons. They had the larger season of the larger army, and then they had on Earth when they went back after the devastation.
Yeah, after the big final fight between the Zentradi and Earth, and they had the Grand Cannon and SDF-1 going out there and fighting, and they you know, kill the commander Dolls, who's the leader of the Zentradi, and then trying to deal with all the Zentradi and the human getting together, coexisting. Some are, you know, human size, others are still in their 50-foot form, and it, yeah.
You know what the unification model was the entire time? Lin-Minmay.
Yeah, they all fell in love with the music of a 16-year-old girl who they held in high respect. That's right, she played a big part, because they love that music songs.
Well, they had to use a song in battle, and then they show the footage of Hayes and Rick Hunter kissing again.
Yeah, and they're all like, what? These are emotions or whatever? What are they doing? You're feeding out? What? It's news to us. And they're like disgusted or whatever.
And then some are deserting, and then they come on a ship, and they're getting be smaller and not on the ship.
Yeah, when
the peace talks start out.
My favorite part is when they're brought before Commander Dold, and it's like Lisa, Rick, Max is there, and then he's there, and they're like, hey, why don't you and the male, and Bruno's like, I'll do it. She's like, no. And Rick's like, well, I don't want to do it. She's like, well, I'd much rather do it with you than the other two. So I'm your commanding officer, so you need to kiss.
Yeah.
The biggest fans of each other.
Why, I don't know, being commanded to do PDA, that's why. I didn't know that would be a battle tactic, to be honest.
And you know, I know I'm the hindsight 2020, but just the relationship between Rick and Minmay at the very beginning, like she was like 15 and he was like 20, and they were like kind of had like
changes age dramatically.
Yeah,
because the original in the SDF Macross was actually, I think, 17, 16. So.
Then they made him, like, in his early 20s. He's, like, an older teenager. He's, like, 19, 20, and he's, like, you know, stuck with this girl for a couple of weeks. And then another thing, I don't know why they did it, but they did do a shower scene with Minmay. And I'm like, she's supposed to be, like, a 15-year-old. Like, come on. It's a little, like, no need for that. But, yeah, I just thought that was a little weird. And then Lisa was older than Rick by a couple of years, I think. Like,
yeah, she had a formal relationship to get married. They died in action. And then they're slowly, because Minmay's singing on the ship because he won the Macross contest pageant. They just kind of drift apart. And Hayes is the one that's there because of the army connection.
Yeah, and she's there with Claudette and, you know, Roy, because Roy dies and her and Claudette are really close, and so, like, Rick is, like, that's his brother, basically, and,
you know, and start with his cousin, Ken Lyle.
Oh, God, yeah, what's like
that?
Oh, he was a jackass.
He's like, such a mess. Oh, my gosh.
Well,
I don't even know how he kept Minmay under structure.
Wait, he, at the end of the day, he only cared about himself, you know? Like, that was his whole thing. It's why
he ended up caring for Minmay in a way that came weird as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's Ken. That's all I'm going to mention. Zeke's most of a side character.
Yeah, and like you're saying, we're seeing this through the eyes of an adult or whatever, and you're talking about almost 4 years ago when this came out. So, I mean, we're talking through the of hindsight 2020. You know, like I said, we're adults looking back at it. There's a weirdness that goes on.
The themes of even then was still viewed upon as the culture of the character, so the customs. But yeah, it's interesting how the two different segments of the Macross saga played out. And then coming back to us, and then preparing for Voyage Outside was the introduction of Southern Cross. But the main connection with Southern Cross was Robotech, the first movie, which was completely strange with two different bit rates combined.
And the animation was, I think, pretty horrible, too. The animation was different than the
Megazone 22-3. And combine it with deleted from Southern Cross for the Robotech Masters to come in and basically use a clone to actually get the data to a satellite, and then they retrieve the from the Matrix from the SDF-1. I don't know.
Yeah.
Eve leading the last MODOK with a pilot who doesn't know how to operate it except for motorcycle capability, and then somehow learns to fly a jet.
Yeah.
By himself, taking on the forces that the imposter has, the traitor to the Robotech army, but then you have like two separate plots playing out. The battle with Robotech and then the computer. It did not mesh well.
It's like, make it make sense.
It didn't make sense. Just that.
I said, make it make sense.
It's like the forgotten movie that most Robotech fans don't want to accreditate to the fans.
That's why I only remember watching it like real, the one and only time. I've had it on when I'm watching it, but I'm like kind of doing other stuff, whatever, but I've only like watched it, you know, carefully once. It's not really.
It's pretty much just a commentation of film put together to tell a story that could have been done better.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, yeah, that's the introduction to the Robotech Masters saga. So the Masters is now what we need to focus on from the Southern Cross. What do you think of season two?
Well, deal with the Robotech Masters and how that whole thing was weird because they had like every person there's three of, you know what I mean? It's like, and did they ever talk? I don't even remember if they ever talked about how they procreated. Like, I think I know they kind of get married or whatever, but
they cloning
again. I thought they, I mean, the Robotech Masters had, were supposed to.
They can procreate, but the thing is, they kept taking clones, the original bodies, and then degrading the bodies over time to the clone to take over. So
yeah.
The cloning that they did was different than the Zentradi, but they just made clones of similar Zentradi. This one was like complete transition into a clone bot.
Yeah. And like I said, the Robotech Masters were more emotionless and they're also smarter, but I just still think like the whole thing of like the rule three with them, like every person, there's three of them or whatever, like the same type, whether it be like three brothers, three sisters, and you know, they all kind of act alike, but you know, there is the what I don't know her name, but like she fell in love with one of the members. Yeah, Musica. She fell in love. Yes. It's been a while.
That's another thing. Music plays another role in the Robotech Masters saga, but in a different way. Musica controls the music to coordinate the clones to fight in the battle against Southern Cross.
Yeah, her and her sisters.
So, Well, it's mostly music. They do it together, but music is the main force behind the art. So it's interesting that Bowie has a connection with being on the piano that he does, seeing him for the first time, and they couldn't really talk to each other, but they had music as a connection, and when he played the music and Evan interacting with him, that's all she can think about.
Like I said, because you're talking about they go from like having no kind of emotion living sheltered, and then they get like this new experience, and it's like a drug to them. And that's what they want to experience. You know, they're trying to live their life, but they're like, oh my God, I'm thinking about Bowie and how he made me feel, and I just want to see him again. Because it's literally like a drug for them. They're experiencing something new that makes them happy, and it's not harming them, and you know. And then it makes them question their whole way of life, if they're right and how they're doing things and all that. So that's how I think of it. It's like feeling these new emotions when it comes like a high form, and they want to continue doing it because it makes them feel good.
And yeah, and the connection to season two from the Cross Saga is the Dane and Sterling connection when Max and Maria had their child. Apparently, the main character of Southern Cross is now the child of the Sterling that got married in season one.
Yeah, it's a daughter.
Blonde hair, no connection to green hair.
Yeah.
That is mind-boggling. If you're going to sell them as a character, as a child of these two ace pilots from season one, Where's the connection in the hair?
The connection
in the hair in season one was green hair.
Yeah.
Maybe as a baby, you know, her hair got lighter.
I really don't know.
And like I said, it's weird because then you have the main character, half human, half Zentradi, which basically makes her half Robotech Master because they're basically the same race.
Yeah, but they didn't really feel too much on that connection.
No.
They didn't really give her any character of an alien background, except when the protoculture gave her a warning for the warning of three, don't let the spores bloom. The end of it. That's it.
The flower of life, or whatever, because that's where the protoculture make the flowers, and they bloom, and then it sends the signal out for the invid, because they're like bugs, or... We'll get to them soon, I'm sure.
Yeah. It's just, I feel like her storyline was the one that sold it with Squadron 15, but then we had the extreme failure of the Supreme Commander. Keep sending in the troops to die, because he doesn't want to change strategy, he just wants to do all offense strategy and nothing else.
Yeah, now we're going in the military. That guy,
Leonard was completely the failure of bureaucracy in the military.
Yes, yes. He didn't listen to people that try to tell him otherwise and all this. The military stuff, and that's why, like, Dana had to do things with, I think, one of the commanders she was cool with. Would kind of like look the other way or whatever. Even the military police chick that she was had an off again, you know, friendship with, you know, that would help her too by covering for her and stuff. But they had to do some, like, you know.
Well, Nova was interesting in her character, but she just kept trying to uphold the military police, the GMP, as protocol over anything, and then can't let things slide.
She comes around, though.
She comes around, but. It takes literally her with a gun trying to get the prisoner back, which is Musica, to even persuade her to actually what's going on.
But, you know, at the end of the day, she does let it slide, and she kind of realizes, hey, you know what?
She lets it slide when she knows that basically if they don't do something, that they're going to get crippled by another invasion for the third Robotech War. So...
Yep.
I guess that's when she let it slide, when the entire planet's at risk.
Yeah, and they had the Robotech pilot that they captured, and they tried to have him join Dana Sterling's. He's a big Zor. Part. Zor, yeah.
Prime.
Zor Prime, he was supposed to be the clone, basically the one that introduced the Robotechnology to the humans.
Yes, the original Zor that made the SDF-1 come to Earth and basically... change the makeup of Earth being the highlight. Oh, that's also weird. The original series, they went to war over the SDF-1, but in season one, the SDF actually basically stopped World War and the unification of the entire planet.
Yeah, it did, because they're all fighting each other, and then it got to the point where they're like, I don't even know why the fuck we're fighting, and then SDF-1 just kind of crashed, and then everyone's just like, oh shit, this big ass ship that landed, let's come together. And that's why Mycroft City was built around that, to support the whatever, you know.
But in the original Macross, that ship was actually what started the global war. So it's interesting, the small subtleties that actually makes a better story, because I feel like them starting World War would have not been good. The peace story until the Zentradi came for the first Robotech War was actually more beneficial in the storytelling.
Yeah.
So it worked out better to stop all firing and then unite it to one front to get the SDF-1 up and running before it was even ready to take the Zentradi. But if you go back to Southern Cross, and you see the incompetence of the Supreme Commander, which she literally isolated all adversaries, put them in the space as a way to put a distance, but if anything happened to them, they would have been gone.
I want to bring it back to what you're saying, that they switched it up. I mean, don't you think if the SDF-1 created the global war that they were having, like all the different countries or factions or whatever fighting each other, and then I think it made a better story if they're all fighting over the ship because they want the technology, then all of a sudden the Zentradi come back, and then now Earth all like has to be like, shit, like, we need to stop fighting each other because we have a bigger threat to deal with, and it kind of brings them together, you know? Like, the enemy is now my friend.
They did it in Macross, but no. The transitioning of Southern Cross at the end gets a little choppy. But you can see that there's footage not there used in the first movie.
Yeah. I mean, and then we're going back to, you know, what we're talking with Southern Cross, aka the Robotech. The Robotech Masters saga. The story is okay, and so. The Robotech were just all basically, I guess, Earth had a lot of protoculture that they wanted to take, and that's what they were trying to get, and, you know, they were trying to kill off the humans or, you know, annihilate them just because that's what they want. And that's basically all protoculture is fuel, like a biochemical fuel or whatever. It helps fuel the jets, fuels their machine to, you know, do their cloning and all that. It's basically their life source.
What if the mission diplomacy actually worked? If they were actually able to get a meeting with the Robotech Masters to discuss what they actually wanted instead of just fighting from the Supreme Commander?
I mean, the diplomacy could work, but you gotta understand, like, it takes both sides to want to talk. And if one side's shooting at you, you have to sit there and take care of it.
I know, but like, not to open that up as no opportunity at all. It's kind of like you didn't even try. You didn't send a Rincon vessel to go out there to see if it was even possible.
Well, I mean, if you're, let's put it in this perspective. You're sitting there chilling at your house, right? You have, I don't know, say you have some vegetables that people like, or you're still under your vegetables because they're on in your house, your property, and then I just come and like kick in the door because I want those vegetables and I'm shooting at you, not talking to you, you know what I mean? Like, how are you going to respond?
Yeah, but if you have overwhelming more technological advances that I can keep up with, and we're losing more people than the world can actually give us, wouldn't, you know, diplomacy be an option to consider if you just send a weak messenger to see if they were able to do it?
But like I said, you're talking about they're in a war and they're fighting each other, you know. You know, you gotta keep doing what you do, and if there's a break in a fight, I get it, diplomacy would work, but you don't want to sit there and make yourself look weak either, you know?
Well, did diplomacy actually make the season one weak? Like, that actually resulted in the Central Allies fighting the main fleet.
Well, those are people that they have talked to and met with, and there's already, you know, especially in the season one, there's already dissension in the ranks of the Zentradi due to Midmay performing her songs and making people feel their emotion, and they wanted that drug. So they were starting to either just take whole ship, take it over and go fly over with Earth and join them, or, you know, they turn into what they call the Micronian version of themselves, and they start defecting, they start deserting otherwise.
Okay. Well, maybe, you know, season one had a Central Allies going into the main fleet, where Robotech was just mostly war to the end, and at least in space, the Light Post was actually put in charge. That wasn't the Supreme Commander. He pissed me off. Like,
he really made a lot of boneheaded decisions.
Like, if you're going to go all-out war, at least send some recon or, you know, do a guerrilla warfare, come back. You know, you don't have to have the entire fleet wiped out.
You don't need to keep sending battle squadrons up there, like whole armies that just get...
You're at a disadvantage, regroup. You know, that's something that doesn't necessarily lose space. But he didn't lose space at all.
It's one of the things that as the High Commander would do is he's sending battle group after battle group out and not doing anything instead of maybe trying to draw them into Earth where you're fighting on your own home turf when you know it better, you know? and there you go.
It gave the Robotech masters the impression that they're foolish and don't know when to stop and don't know how to strategize.
But then also the robot, you know, but then Dana Sterling and her squad, I think they're like, I forgot their squad number, but them doing what they were doing, breaking into these the ships and causing dissension among their own ranks, starting to, you know, have people wanting to have a good field, was also starting to take a hold on all the different Robotech Master civilians, not just the warriors. Because they're kind of, and they were doing it, like you said, like more of a guerrilla tactic. It was starting to do things and making people think. And then the, I forgot what the three Robotech Master leaders were called, but they're starting to lose control over the people that they had.
Yeah. So it's interesting because, you know, most of the, you know, Squadron 15 was just hovercraft that was sent in for recon and were more successful than the army that Supreme Commander sent.
They're hover tanks, okay?
Yes.
Come on. You gotta remember they're hover tanks because tanks are amazing.
Yeah, hovercraft technology with a hover tank. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. But you do see the ride form, the battle form, and the gun form. So you see a third form than we saw in the original. Because you just had the battleroid form and the jet form.
No, they had the guardian form.
Yeah, they had the guardian form too, but it's still technically, I guess you can say mobile weaponry, I guess. There's a phase.
Yeah, I mean, because they had like, they just had arms and legs, but it's still a plane. It wasn't like a full, but yeah, so they had the three formed in the original one too, the Veritech fighters. But the other tank, you know, they had the tank mode, then they'll go into like the guardian mode or whatever, where they had like the leg. But yeah, and then I think there's also, they had some of the cycle Robotech vehicles too, finally coming out. They had a couple of those out and about.
Yeah. True. I don't know, Southern Cross was interesting.
It was.
But towards the end, it got a little choppy, and then one episode in, Zor basically make the protocol ship bloom, and the spores single the Envy. And then the next episode, they're just like blasting the planet, and you don't really see much of the fighting because of, oh, they spent so much resources finding the Second World Protect War that they instant chance. It's like, okay, well, could that have been an episode of entire fighting and then losing?
And then it goes like, what, 15, 20 years into the future when it goes into
the
narration or whatever?
We don't even see flashback scenes of the actual fighting, like, for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, so, and the thing, what I don't know, is what happened to the Robotech Masters? Did it, like, destroy it? Did they run away?
No, they were disposed of. The refugees went back to the planet, and then whatever the Invid did, I guess they didn't survive.
Well, the Invid basically came in and freaking dropped their, you know, their, metaphorically, they dropped their balls on the table and it fucked up Earth altogether, and,
yeah,
you know, they left it basically deserted. But then, another thing I'm trying to understand in the third Robotech series of what they call the Next Generation or New Generation, how did Rick Hunter get his fleet? How did he get all these members of his fleet?
That's from the original expedition party that was sent to the battle planet.
But then, how are there so many?
Because he has 20 years to grow the army with the numbers on the ship.
I mean, I guess that makes sense, but I just never understood how he...
We do remember when the second movie introduced the Sentinels, with the marriage of Hayes and Hunter, you also realize that the Invid went to Robotech Masters. SDF-3 was launched, taking almost all of the primary defense that Earth had to go to the Robotech's planet. So they took most of the fleet with them to find out more about protoculture and take the fight to the Robotechs before another Robotech war happened.
Okay. It seems like most of the fleet
that could have had access to with the Southern Cross, they did it. So already at a disadvantage finding the Robotech Master.
Okay, so maybe the fleet was bigger than I remember it being, because I only thought it
was small. It had a lot of different
Maybe that's what I'm missing, but I just remember, I'm just like, how the fuck did Rick Hunter get this big-ass fleet that they're trying to basically launch a counterattack to take back Earth? And I was just like, we're, you know, I thought all humanity would basically put destroy during the invade when they came in and metaphorically just dropped their ball to, you know, take everyone out, basically.
I do like the new generation. I think the new generation had probably the best continuity because of how long it passed from the invade.
Yeah.
It wasn't really, like, super connected to the main two seasons, but it had enough connection where, you know, that Southern Cross introduced that it was still part of the protoculture fight.
Yeah, it was, you know, like I said, it introduced new characters, and they're telling the story a different way. You're talking about, instead of, like, military forces that are already established, you're talking about, yes, there's some kind of military, but it's just following a band of basically rebels, you know, gathering support and dealing with people in town and your stories and stuff like that. And most of the characters aren't soldiers. They have nothing to do with military. They're either mercenaries or just people they found along the way or whatever. And they kind of grow into a family, into a unit, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's basically military conquests, colonization, that take over. And then you have rebels, independent groups making the rebel fights. And when the Space Force from space, expeditionary, came in, got wiped out, we have the leader already established. Then we also have the second leader already established. With,
yeah,
you know, him being the David Boone character who could survive in the wild. So, and then we had the commander. So, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I do know that the expeditionary force that attacked at the very beginning wasn't like the main fleet because they were still with the SDF-3 coming, but it just talked about how Scott Bernard, the main character, was able to, who was part of it, lost his, you know, he's able to gather resources, gather more people, and kind of start uniting all these different groups, little rebel groups, whatever, connecting them while he's still, and then connecting with the Robotech fleet or under Rick Hunter, and he's able all to kind of help get that happen. And, you know, it's like, kind of like this, he just started from the bottom and he's collecting people, getting information, learning things, while still contacting, you know, a bigger force that's there to help him. And then when they're ready to attack, he has all these different rebel groups that were not connected and ready to join them.
Yeah. And you know, with the Envy, I think, to be honest, they're probably the best alien race that the series has actually produced. Just for the simple fact that, you know, due to the Zentradi and the Robotechs being an enemy to them for protoculture, that they were forced to evolve in the evolution of the ultimate life form is like their goal. Instead of like protoculture as an energy to have an army, they were seeking it for another reason.
Yeah, I think the Invid also were set up a little different. They had the Regent, which is the Regent Queen or whatever she was. Yeah, it is the, like, basically the overall leader. And you don't see any of the regular Invid. You just see them in the battle suits. You only see, like, I think three that you, or four if you want to count the queen, that you actually see some kind of humanoid or actual form of them.
Yes. And the actual, in the shock troopers, you think it's robots, was not, though, operated by the slime or insect-like creatures that the Invid is. So, but yeah, they advanced to the point where they became civilized to fight against what was happening.
Yeah, they, the Invid are able to, like you said, they adapt. You know, I think the biggest problem, with, especially with the Zentradi, is that they only knew how to fight, but they didn't know how to learn. They didn't know how to repair things. They just were given stuff by the Robotech Masters to go out and fight. And they didn't learn anything else. And the Robotech Masters, I feel like they thought the way they were doing things was the best way to do it. And they never changed. They never adapted. And that's why I think they were so afraid of the Invid, because the Invid just came in and they just wiped the floor to everybody, basically.
Yeah. that's why they're so desperate to get the protocultures to secure their entire civilization, the Robotechs try to do. And then the downfall of the Robotechs masters was the reason why the protoculture spores bloomed and went over the Earth as a fertile ground for the infant to come in.
Yeah, and I believe the protoculture flowers of life would go and bloom somewhere, and then I think
that
plays like,
you know, that the envy, the senses were such that energy spectrum of that protoculture.
Yeah, and I always thought
they get ready to go out,
and I thought that it would signal that it was also gonna like create its own protoculture, like grow it somehow or whatever. But I could be wrong. That is what a theory I had, that those flowers were like seed that kind of made more protoculture. But, you know, like I said, I could be wrong in that part.
You know what I also like is that we actually see protoculture in physical form and then convert it to an energy form. So the batteries of the cells. Like, we didn't see the cells at all through Southern Cross and Crosstalk. They talked about protoculture and having it fuel and stuff like that, but they were more giant. It was the protocol matrix instead.
Yeah.
But because the matrix is now done with, it's all these individual cells.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at it from the Invid side, they need the protoculture as, like, their lifeblood. That's what they need to survive.
Yeah.
So you kind of feel for them that, you know, what they're doing, it maybe is wrong, but they're doing it to keep their own species alive.
Yeah.
As with the Robotech Masters and the Zentradi, they only use protoculture for, like, science stuff, whatever. When they can, you know, eat regular food and procreate and everything else, they were kind of using it for a bad reason. The Invid, it's literally what gives them life, you know?
Yeah. And Zoa is the one that took it away from them and then saw this entire conquest to add the STF-1 and then...
It comes full circle.
Yeah, it comes around when they start from them. They'll seek out revenge. They mutated and they're more violent to be the fittest of the fittest. Survival of the fittest.
Yeah, like we can say, we can talk about the third Robotech series, which is really good. I forgot how you said it, but I think is the new generation. Yeah. Not the last, the Shadow Chronicles, the movie.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's the next generation. So,
yeah,
the rebels that we see are the next small fighting force, similar to Squadron 15, fighting for the end of the conquest of the Invid.
Yeah,
they come together because either they're at one point former military or military, or come from a background where the need to fight is established for them to take back the Earth.
And then you have Annie.
Yeah, she's the tag-along.
Yeah, but she, you know, I think she's like...
She's not a bad tag-along. She's very useful.
Yeah, she's, you know, in that group, it's like, she kind of is, like, your inspiration, like, the heart of the group, because she's
a young,
I want to say she's probably maybe preteen or early teenage years.
Oh, she's an adult.
She's supposed to be an adult?
Yes.
God, they made her look so young. That's weird. But yeah, she was short. She was a little shorty.
Yeah.
Shorty. No, and so they're bringing her along. She's tagging along. But, it, you know, when you have a group like that, it keeps the hope up. It's just inspiration and, you know, the laughter. Usually every kind of group has someone like that where they're always, you know, the inspirational one, the morale booster, you know. And I think that's what she played. That was her role.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, you had Rook and Ran who were, you know, they had to learn how to fight. And then Scott Bernard is, you know, yeah, he's the ex-commando that, you know, failed on his mission. And he's going to make it right. And then now we're going to get back to music. They had Lance, Corporal Lancer, a.k.a. Yellow Dancer, who was a performer and made the music that... You know, uplifted people, and that's what he did.
Now the music is also used in the military again as a smokescreen,
like an anthem, power anthem.
Yeah, like I'm gonna sing, you guys get into action, we make an operation together.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, that's why music does play a big attention, and it had a lot of the like electro pop of the 80s.
Yeah.
You know? So that's why I said, like, the music is great. And like I said, we love the 1980s a lot still to this day. So that's why I feel like a lot of people like it. And believe it or not, following the story of Robotech is a lot easier than some modern animes have out now when you're trying to understand what's going on.
Well, I know, you know, the connections and the continuity is there. Some things might be need to elaborate a little bit more, but overall, it was a good attempt to three different problems that it shouldn't go together, but somehow go together.
Yeah, and that's why I like a lot of older animes. To me, I like them more than... I'm not saying the modern ones are bad by any means, but it's just from a storytelling aspect. You're watching these animes, and you can understand the story, you can understand the characters, watch them develop, and you understand everything, because it's not super elaborate, and they're, you know... Not, it's like, yeah, they focus on trying to have their enemies or whatever, but you follow everything. You know, you can understand what is going on.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, last depiction we need to talk about is the Shadow Karma.
Which I still think is still controversial itself, because I was told it was supposed to be a series back in 2006. And it was like, oh, yeah, it's going to be a new series that's coming out. And then we just got a movie. And then the Shadow Chronicles is about like a totally different group of aliens that fight the Envy that we had no idea about.
That's the Hakamite?
Yeah.
If I died, yeah. Well,
something like that.
That group was actually, the Shadow Chronicles was actually supposed to take place before the third season. However, the Aphrodite alien group was the ones that then there was the original four. So that was a group in Macross that they just didn't really connect.
Yeah, it wasn't bad or whatever, but they just kind of left you like the character that they had in there was like half human, half the head and bite or whatever. And then it just, okay, well, what have you done in the past 18 years? No, sorry. I'm trying to do math. Sorry, my brain hurts. Yeah, no, 18 years. They haven't done anything with it.
Yeah.
They haven't added to it. They haven't tried to explain it. Nothing. It just, you know, you give us like all this and we're like, okay, well, what's the next chapter? You know, when is it going to end? But they don't give it to you. And for the past 18 years, we've been stuck in limbo of like, how is this whole thing going to play itself out? You know?
It did. It did. But with so many gold finally getting together with Big West and the production company, Tyway, I think, they're going to actually make the Robotech live action, which is, I don't know if that's the best move, but if that's the continuation of Robotech, I guess that's what they want
to
do.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, it would be cool to watch live action, but, like, why don't you stick to what was working, you know? I think,
yeah, animation... What else we can really go off on, because the only other properties in the universe is Macross. However, they don't really have any continuity to tie back to Robotech.
Yeah, and then that, if you're going to make live action, like, it's going to cost you a lot of money because you got to do a lot of CGI for the aliens and, you know, the animation. I just think you get some bomb-ass freaking voice actors and bang out a new thing of what's going on instead of trying something new where it's just going to cost you a lot of money. And most likely, it's you're going to fail at it.
Yeah.
Not saying that it's not possible, but it's just, you know, sometimes things are just better as animation or whatever. It just works better that way.
But yeah, I hope you guys like the Robotech, the anime review of Robotech. I think it definitely was a pivotal point for animation in the West to bring the essence of Japan, but in an American way. It seeked unification for 65 episodes. It got 85 instead, so syndication was really easy. And Harmony Gold really took three separate properties and definitely made something out of it to be very nostalgic even now.
They really did. So good to people that know how to write.
True, and redub it to make it all connect.
And yeah, make it make sense for the most part.
Yeah. But yeah, do you have any final thoughts?
Like I said, Robotech is still one of my all-time favorite animes because, yeah, I'm a kid of the 80s. The music, the easy to follow, and just all, I guess, more nostalgia for it as well. I love a lot of the characters. I connected with some of them more than others. And that's why I love the series, and that's why I can talk about this all over and over.
True. All right, well, there you guys have it. Leslie's a huge fan of Robotech, and I got introduced to the podcast, so it can't be all too bad.
It's not bad at all. It's almost the greatest thing ever.
And that's why I like it. The more connection you have, sometimes it will surprise you what actually comes out at the end. So thank you for being here, Leslie. It was fun having you.
Of course, anytime, man. Anytime we can make it happen.
Where can they find you to see if they want to follow you?
Well, you can find me in the bushes at midnight taking selfies of myself with the moon in the background. I like that moon filter. But when I'm not doing that weirdness, you can just find me on all platforms, Leslie Madewell or Madewell Art Photography. I am on all forums except for Snapchat. So that's where you can find me at. My podcast is The Lesson Made, which I'm going to have you as a guest now on. Maybe we can talk some Halloween stuff or whatever, working on that. But that's, you can find me on
that. Yeah, interesting.
You can find me on Snapchat.
Interesting. All right, guys. This is MC Anime signing off.
Bye.
This concludes another episode of MC Anime Podcast. MC Anime Podcast is available on podcast directories like Google Podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. We also have our website at mcanimepodcast.com. If you want to directly support us, then follow Patreon blog MC Anime. Finally, if you want services for hire, then we're available on Fiverr for audio and video production, graphic design, idea consulting, and blog and article writing.